Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. I am here with Christopher J. O'Shea. Christopher, how are you?
Doing fine, sir. How are you?
Whoa, you're alive and well.
I am.
Aren't you?
That's without soda, caffeine, or anything else. I'm just glad to be here. I'll tone it down a little bit.
Yeah.
How's that? I mean, it was my voice and your pink shirt, I don't know, you know, we've got things going on.
I don't know how to take that, Christopher, but, you know.
Well, you've got white stripes in it.
Questioning
stripes,
my manliness with the pink shirt on, you know.
Only dark.
You know,
comfortable men can wear pink.
You know why I wear this? It's my good friend Jim Cowan in England. He wore pink once. I teased him about it, and he tested me, and he said, you try it someday. See, you know? And so, you know, the English will do different things like that, you know?
That's good. Well, pink doesn't look good on English and Irish, you know, the fair-skinned folks, you know? So I just don't do it.
I hear you. Anyway, we have a guest tonight, and our guest is?
Yes, we do. We have a very interesting guest. It's Deborah Jacobs. And she's a lawyer and journalist. She went to Columbia's Graduate School for Journalism, and she went to their law school and graduated. And
that's a good thing if you're going to be a lawyer.
Right. Well, I wanted to
graduate
in there because a lot of people say they studied at X, Y, and Z place and nothing.
Yeah.
So that's a prestigious schools, and that Deborah's wondering, what am I getting myself into?
Right.
Here? And so she's a senior editor at Forbes. And she's an award-winning journalist because she's published in New York Times, Bloomberg Wealth Manager, Business Week, and many other publications. And this book, Estate Planning Smarts, is has a lot of favorable reviews from the Wall Street Journal and many other places, many other people that are in the profession.
Right.
So it's a great book. This is an updated edition of the book.
Yep.
And so that's who she is.
All right. Deborah, are you on there with us?
I am.
All right. Well, we appreciate you being with us. And your book, Estate Planning Smarts, was written to the general public, though, wasn't it?
Yes. I wrote to the general public because I had been writing articles for various places on estate planning, and lawyers and financial advisors told me they were giving my articles to their clients to explain things that they found difficult to explain in layman's terms themselves. So I decided, why not write a book and do it from start to finish? And it's now in the third edition.
Yeah. You know, as a comprehensive advisor, that's something that we struggle with, is to learn how to speak to our clients in a way that they can understand it. But you did a fantastic job in this book, Estate Planning Smarts. And what I wanted to do is just, we only have a half hour with you, so I wanted to take maximum advantage of you know, bringing information to our listeners that can be most beneficial. So you had mentioned that there are a lot of mistakes that people make. So why don't you tell us one of your mistakes, and then we'll talk about that in a little detail, okay? What are some of the mistakes you find people make?
The first thing is that people think if they're not super rich, they think they don't have an estate. They hear the term estate planning, and they think that they have to have a big house, like something out of The Great Gatsby. And in fact, everybody has an estate. An estate is anything that you leave behind. So people who think that they don't need to do estate planning, that's the first mistake.
Wouldn't you also say that young people who are having children, that is a big mistake too, not thinking that they have an estate when they have children and not having a will and so forth?
Well, it's interesting you mention that, because a lot of people think estate planning is just for old folks. And when I wrote this book, I made a deliberate attempt to put a lot of young people on the cover, people with young children and holding babies and grandparents with babies and young parents with babies. And the message I was trying to get across is that you're right. Anyone who has a child, the first thing they should do once they get home from the hospital is write a will, because without a will, there's no way to appoint a guardian for your child.
That's critical.
Happens to you.
Yeah.
So people associate a will with giving away your stuff, and yes, it's a good idea to have a will to give away your stuff, because without one, your stuff gets distributed according to state law, and it may not go to the people who you want. But especially for parents of young children, a will is the only way to appoint a guardian in case, God forbid, something happens. Nobody wants to think about that. No young parent wants to think about that. They're busy feeding the baby and trying to get a little sleep and getting back into shape. And so it's very hard to talk to this audience about estate planning, and they are just the most underserved audience because they don't want to hear about it.
You know, Deborah, it's funny, you know, you bring that up, because when I first got into this business in 1980, now I don't look like I'm that old, but when I got in this business in 19, no comments from the peanut gallery.
I'm going to take your word for that, but anyway.
He does. So, yeah, he's,
In 1979, around 1982 or 3, a lady came to me, and her husband, when they had two children, 2 and 4, her husband died unexpectedly. He had a life insurance policy. He didn't have beneficiaries on the life insurance policy. It was a fairly big policy for back then. It was $400,000, but he didn't have a beneficiary. It went intestate. $200,000 went to the children. $200,000 went to the mother. And you and I both know what that meant. It sounds like it's not that horrible a deal, but that's probably the worst thing that could have ever happened to that lady with two young children at that time. So,
yes,
address what happened when that happened, and $200,000 went to the children, and only $200,000 went to the mother.
Well, there's sort of two elements of that. One is that a life insurance policy is what we call a non-probate asset. A non-probate asset is an asset that passes not under a will or a living trust, but according to a beneficiary designation form that you fill out when you buy the policy and which you can amend. It's one of several important non-probate assets that pass according to a beneficiary designation form. So in that example, the first thing that the father did was he didn't fill out the beneficiary designation form. As a result of that, the assets passed through the estate, and it sounds like he didn't have a will either. And in Maryland, if you don't have a will, in all states, if you don't have a will, the assets pass according to state law. But state laws vary enormously in terms of who gets what, particularly as between the spouse and the minor children. So in Maryland, for example, if you die without a will and you leave behind a spouse and a surviving minor child, the spouse only gets half. The children are entitled to the other half. So if he had more than one kid, the children would share the 50% of what was in this life insurance policy. So you think about young kids being entitled to, together, the siblings sharing, in this example, $200,000. That's, I'm sure, not the result that he would have wanted, and perhaps it left his wife with insufficient cash and the kids with too much money that was technically theirs and that their own mother couldn't legally touch.
That's right. That was such a sad part of the story. But can you hold on for us for 1 second? Actually, it's going to be about a minute or two. We're going to do a couple quick spots and talk about traffic, and we want to come back and hit some more of these mistakes that people make and really encourage people. Get this book, Estate Planning Smarts by Deborah Jacobs. So hold on with us, Deborah. We're going to go to Maggie Hunter in traffic. We're going to be right back. Money, Rich, and Wealth. Take it away.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And this is Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here tonight. We're talking with Deborah Jacobs about her book, Estate Planning Smarts. And it's a great estate planning resource for the general consuming audience. You don't have to be an expert. And like she said at the beginning, you don't have to be rich. Everyone needs an estate plan. And Deborah, one of the things that you told me about when we were talking was, you know, any of your children going back to college at 18, we talk to our clients a lot about this, what a mistake it is not to have some estate planning documents for them. Why don't we talk a little bit about that?
Yes, well, I just actually did a blog post on this on my
Where do you do
blog
your blog post that they can get your
yeah.
blogs?
It's on Forbes.com. If they Google my name, Deborah L. Jacobs, and Forbes.com, they'll come up with my blog. And I actually just did a post for Back to School, two documents every 18-year-old should sign. And the two documents relate to the fact that age 18, children... you still think they're kids, you still think of them as babies, but legally in most states they are adults with control over their own money and their own health care decisions. And in the blog post I give the example of a father whose son went away to college, and on spring break he went down to Mexico and he got dysentery, and he got home, he got back to school and he was in the infirmary, and he called his father, and dad went running to campus to be with his son, and the doctors wouldn't talk to him because they wouldn't discuss his own son's medical condition with dad, because the son was 19 and he had not signed a document giving his father authority to make health care decisions for him and talk to his doctors if he couldn't. So every 18-year-old should sign what we call a healthcare proxy, or sometimes called a healthcare power of attorney, authorizing someone to make medical decisions for you if you can't, and legally that person also is entitled to get access to your medical records. So that's a really important thing, because even though when we are raising kids and they're teenagers and there's a lot of tension going through these adolescent years, and by the time they go to college, maybe you're just like really happy to see them go, but you're still their fallback for a while. And,
yep.
And so really parents do need that authority. And the other thing is that, you know, if your child has any sum of money in what we call a custodial account, that is, parent runs the account or some other grown-up runs the account for the young person until they reach the age of majority. Once they reach the age of majority, they are entitled to the money. And maybe the parents have been managing it for them up until now, and they want to keep doing that, and they want to gradually teach them how to manage their own money. At that point, they're going to need what we call a durable power of attorney, which is a document that gives the parent or some other trusted person authority to manage the financial assets for that young person going off to college.
Yeah.
And so having these two documents, I mean, typically with older people, we think of a durable power of attorney as something that will kick in when they're no longer able to manage their financial affairs, for example, in case of illness or incapacity. With a young person, you need to be concerned with those issues as well. You know, car accidents are unfortunately all too frequent with the college age set, so you do need to be concerned about that. But there may also be parents who just want to stay involved for a little longer with the finances, and a durable power of attorney gives some authority to
now,
do that.
Now, Deborah, the advance directive, the one if you have that medical emergency and you run to college, you know, because your child's been hurt, wherever it is, you know, the advance directive in the state of Maryland and every state in the country, you can get those for free. Every
yes.
attorney general has it for free. In Maryland, just Google Maryland Attorney General advance directive, and it'll come up, and you can get it for free.
Yes, and the other thing that those documents often cover is your preferences about end-of-life care. Sometimes it's in a separate living will, but it's more convenient to have it in the same document, so that if you don't want to be kept on life support for any period of time, you can express your wishes about that, too.
So,
these are unpleasant things to think about, but it's a rite of passage for young people going off to college, and it's also a rite of passage for the parents.
Yeah, it's very important. What other mistakes? We only have a little bit of time. What other major mistakes do you see?
Well, you mentioned the life insurance policy in your example before the break. You mentioned the life insurance policy that had no beneficiary, and I said that life insurance policy is an example of a non-probate asset, an asset that doesn't pass under a will or a living trust. Another really important one is retirement accounts. These are IRAs, 401Ks, 403B, whatever kind of retirement account you have. It's a very common misconception. People think it's covered by a will, and that's not true. It passes according to the beneficiary designation form that you fill out when you open the account and later amend. And if you don't fill out that beneficiary designation form, there are very unfavorable income tax consequences for your heirs. So it's very important to fill out the form, name a primary beneficiary, name an alternate beneficiary in case for some reason the primary beneficiary is not alive when you die. Never name your estate as the beneficiary. Review those forms annually and update them as needed, and keep them with your important papers where your heirs can find them, and send the original of it to the financial institution that holds your retirement account and ask it to acknowledge receipt of that form.
Now, you know what, Deborah, to give you an emphasis on what you just said, we agree that there are significant income tax consequences if you don't name an individual as a beneficiary as opposed to letting it go to the will. And we review our beneficiary designation forms with our clients once or twice a year with every single client coming in for a review. We always review beneficiary. And do you realize we change them, we correct them 20% of the time? 20% of the time. Now, just think about that.
Yeah. What are the occasions for changing them and correcting them, as you say? Let's tick those off.
Yeah, all kinds of things. They changed their mind about something. They've had a grandchild and they wanted to change that children to per stirpes as opposed to the default, which with most custodians do, which is per capita. There's all kinds of reasons that these beneficiaries, the custodian didn't record it correctly. There's all kinds of reasons that we find that we're correcting these, and we're diligent at trying to make sure that they're correct. But the people come in, we look them over, and they say, "Oh, no, I'd rather have this, or I'd rather have that," and this is the way I'm thinking about it now, and so forth. So it's amazing how often they change, but it's amazing how few people actually review their beneficiary designation forms.
Yeah, I tell people to do it on a specific occasion. If there's not a financial advisor like you chasing them, to do it, either do it on your birthday, do it on New Year's, do it when you change the clocks in the spring or the fall.
Now, do you have one other, because we only got about 3 minutes, you got one other you wanted to address, or should I just ask you another question?
Well, I like to tell people to leave all your important documents where they can be easily found by your relatives. Make things easy for them. I did a blog post recently about a woman, a reader wrote me saying that she didn't find out about her mother's IRA that she and her siblings inherited until 7 years after mom died. And by that time, the account had been unclaimed and had passed to, in this case, the state of Pennsylvania. All the money had been taken out of the IRA account, and it posed all kinds of complicated tax issues. So leave a paper trail, make things easy for your heirs, leave your important documents where they can find them. And it's also helpful for people to leave somewhere in the house or multiple places in the house a list of who your financial advisors are, who's managing your investments, if there is such a person, who your accountant is, and who your lawyer is, and any bills that you were paying online, passwords to email accounts, financial institutions and account numbers. People in grief are dealing with a lot of things, and not to be able to find all these important documents and all this important information just adds to their stress.
You know, a lot of times we encourage our clients to consolidate, keep them all, all your assets in one brokerage firm, one bank account and so forth, so you don't have 22 different custodians and so forth you have to go to. Do you agree?
I totally agree with that, but it's easier said than done, especially in today's economy where people are chasing the best rates, you know, opening CDs all over the place online. So although I do think it's a good idea, especially as people get elderly, all too many people have all too many accounts.
So one last thing before you leave, and I noticed that one thing in your book that I was curious about is there was no mention about a digital estate. Do you have a follow-up to digital estates coming?
Well, I'm thinking in the next edition of my book, I will probably include a chapter on digital assets. And it's a very interesting area of the law that's very much in flux. And I have written on my blog about the difficulties that families sometimes have getting access to email accounts to shut them down. But there's also a matter of access to your Facebook account and your tweets if you want your family to get that. And I'm even thinking, I'm a very avid ebook reader, and I listen to audiobooks too, and so increasingly I've acquired all of these digital assets that I've purchased. So this is a new frontier in estate planning that I plan to cover going forward in my blog and incorporate into a future edition of my book.
All right, Deborah, I really appreciate your time, and also they can get in touch with your information and your blog and so forth on your website, estateplanningsmarts.com. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
So that's estateplanningsmarts.com. Deborah Jacobs, we really appreciate your time. It was very gracious of you to give us this half hour, and it's incredibly worthwhile information.
Thank you, Deborah. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we've got to go to Maggie Hunter in traffic. We're going to be right back, Money, Rich, and Wealth, for the last half hour. Take it away, Maggie.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Noah's trying to win my favor, giving me one of my favorite songs. Red Rubber Ball, you know?
Oh.
Is that a great song?
Sure.
And then if
you say so.
And then later he might play Green Beret, too. Now, you got to like that. I know you like that.
Sure. Yeah, we did. In fact, I think when I was like second grade, I was taking guitar lessons with me and another guy. That was one of the songs that they taught us.
Fighting Soldiers in the Sky. That
right.
one?
Yep. Yep. Yep.
There you go.
Yep.
You got to like it, you
yep.
know?
Of course.
Anyway,
America.
We just did an interview with Deborah Jacobs, and she wrote this book, Estate Planning Smarts, and she could only do a half hour of the show with us, but there's so much more in this book when you talk about estate planning. There's so much more that we could have talked about, you know, we're on the rest of the show. We're on to an open show if anybody wants to call in and ask a question, 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680 if you want to call in and ask a question. But let me see. What else was in this that I thought was interesting? Here's one. She says, personal possessions, lightning rod for conflict. So what she's talking about is that the tangible personal property, the personal possessions, the jewelry, the collectibles, the paintings on the wall, the oriental rugs, the
furniture,
the ice maker.
Sure.
You never know, you know.
Maybe autographed.
You know, maybe somebody has one of those chewable ice makers in their basement, you know?
Sure.
Do you ever think about that?
Not till now.
Do you like chewable ice?
Well, unfortunately, I've done that in the past. I've done that too much.
Yeah, but I mean, there's ice. Now ice that is designed that you can chew it, and it is very light on the teeth to chew.
Oh,
very
well,
specifically designed machines that...
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah, you know, because it's the typical hard frozen ice that causes the problems when you chew on it. But
sure.
Nowadays, like Chick-fil-A is one of the best. They have ice. They're ice makers. I don't know who designed them, but their ice makers are fantastic because that ice is sort of like a snowball. You know, it's like just a slight difference between an ice cube and a snowball.
I didn't know you were an ice chewer.
Oh, yeah. You know, I don't like it if it's solid, you know.
It's got to be melted a little bit.
It's
got
to be that new kind, you know. And there are literally companies that design their ice machine to be chewable. Now, why are we talking about this?
Well, I was just
going to
say, here's something for our listeners out there. Because, okay, we know finances, but we're going to throw out, I heard, someone out there, straighten us out on this. So I heard that if you chew ice on a regular basis, it could be an indication of anemia or borderline anemia.
Oh, well, I ain't got to worry about that. Thank you.
Yeah, so, but anyway.
It. And now I'm going to be thinking about that all day long. Oh, no.
I stopped because I thought I lost a tooth one time about 6 months ago or a year ago. And it turns out it wasn't falling out. I think maybe some screws were loose, but the tooth wasn't falling out. But I've been better ever since.
But what she's saying is lightning rod to conflict is that, you know, you've got three children and you don't say how things are, you know, and somebody's got a real strong emotional attachment to some things, but the other people, all they're worried about, the other siblings, all they're worried about is how much money can I get out of these things? And, you know, and then next thing you know, you've got to negotiate to buy these things as part of your estate inheritance, you know, and all these kind of things. And it can get quite dicey. That's what she's referring to here. And so one of the ways lawyers will deal with this is they'll create this thing called a memorandum. And so the person who writes the will writes a memorandum that says, I want this jewelry to go to these children, I want this furniture to go to these children, and they kind of, the parents deal with this during their lifetime, and everyone knows the rules. Here's what's going here and there and everywhere, et cetera, so that they don't have these kind of conflicts.
Well, one of the things about the book that she puts anecdotes in there, everywhere from the guy who starred in that, I never saw the show, the one who was in the...
I don't watch TV either,
The HBO show, James Gandolfini, I think is his name.
Yeah, the guy that died without a will at all or something, right?
Well, the way his assets were left were, I think, questioned, and they were questionable. And there were other people, Ed Koch, you know, former mayor of New York. He had a $10 million estate. Or she just goes after person, the things that they did and things that they didn't do. And as we tell our clients, and as Deborah Jacobs said, some of these things you don't want to think about. What's the chance that these things are going to happen? They're pretty remote, but if it happens to you, of course, it's 100% chance. For just a few lines or even many lines on a few documents, you can just quell any kind of issues that come up.
Yeah.
With your heirs.
But even if and when you do the estate plan, you got to do it with competent estate advice. You know, you can't just go out there. I know a lot of people that just try to wing it and write a document up themselves. And that's one of the most dangerous. Or they get an attorney to do it for somebody else and then they take it and they wing it for themselves. So, you know, these are some of the more dangerous estate planning. So make sure you find a competent estate attorney to do your estate planning with if you're going to. And I think one of the ones we talked about at the beginning of the show, which is if you're a young parent, you want to get a will naming a guardian, the guardian of your choice for your children, is critical, and that's what that will do. So you have two issues when you have young children. Number one, who's going to care for my children if, God forbid, both of us pass away? And number two, how are the assets going to be handled for young children until they become an adult? And it's up to the parent. If you write a will, you can determine when you consider those children to be an adult. The state considers it age 18. Well, you might not think 18. I know that you and I, or your brother, who I knew very well, if we got a lot of money at 18, it wouldn't have been a pretty story. We might not have been sitting here today, Chris.
I was always a saver, Drew.
Yeah.
But then some things happened.
18
you know
is
what
not,
they say?
Not a
they
good
say
age for
when
us.
It's teenagers, late teenagers, it's the fumes.
Yeah,
it's
that's
the,
right.
It's the perfume and the gasoline and the alcohol fumes. That just sends people in the wrong direction.
Anyway, we've got to take a quick pause. Not a break, Noah, a pause, and then we will be... Noah called it a break here. Look at that. It's called a pause, Noah, not a break. Anyway, we have to take a pause. We're going
to
be right back. We're going to Mark Thibodeau and weather, right? All right. We're going to Mark Thibodeau and weather. We'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. That's a good song.
Yeah, that's a song from our youth.
That's right. Amy, right?
Yeah.
Pure Prairie League.
All right.
There we go. See, you know, country rock, that's something we do know.
Yes, we
you
do.
Know? Anyway, we're back on the last 10 minutes of our show tonight. We talked with Deborah Jacobs at the beginning of the show, and if you wanted to get her book, Estate Planning Smarts, it's written to the general public, and it's an excellent book on estate planning.
Very thorough.
300-some pages on everything you could ever think about, except she didn't talk a thing about digital estate, which is a whole show that we're going to do one night here on Money, Riches,
yeah,
and Wealth.
There's a whole chapter on... what happens if someone's one of the spouses, one of the family members is a foreigner?
Yeah.
You have assets overseas.
Oh, that's a
very
that's
complicated.
A critical area. We've dealt with it before. Anyway, I wanted to talk about another whole different topic that is a big money saver to our clients. Okay. So if, you know, when you get your bills in from your medical providers, be it your doctor, your dermatologist, your whoever you go to, you take somebody to the emergency room. If you take and you just pay the bills that they say, this is your patient responsibility, $50, $100, $500, whatever the case may be. And if you just pay those bills without analyzing them and thinking out thoroughly, do I really owe this bill? You are absolutely, absolutely, absolutely overpaying those providers.
Are you sure?
I'm absolutely certain, because I'll tell you, you know, you've got a good article there you're going to talk about, but I've had at least three incidences. I have at least one or two incidences a year where I have a medical provider sends me a bill and I know it's not right. Like I remember one not too long ago, they said I get a free physical exam every year.
Right.
Okay?
Sure.
So I go to my doctor, I get the free physical exam, boom, I get a bill at the end of the, you know, a little while later, and it's like for $150. And I write, what happened? I get a free physical exam. And he said, well, you know, you told me you had a problem with this. And I said, you asked me what I was, you know, what
sure.
issues, you know, I
How
had.
You
and, you know, he said, do you have anything? Do you have this? And he asked me questions, and I answered him. He says, oh, well, I thought, you know, I coded it, and I didn't realize that your insurance provides a free medical exam and that you were just so I coded it. And he says, I apologize. And he really didn't do it. I mean, he's a great doctor. He's really a great doctor. And you would never, you know, I know he didn't do it on purpose. It's just that everything's codes.
Sure.
And,
that's
you know, I mean, I could tell you story after story of how many times I've had to fix the amount of money and ultimately get them fixed. But it takes effort. Most people don't want to deal with that. But tell us the one you just read.
Sure. Well, briefly, you could go out and see it yourself. Op-ed piece, Wall Street Journal. this the guy who wrote it is a doctor and a lawyer.
Right. Right. A doctor and a lawyer, so he knows the whole game.
He was motivated, too,
right,
because he took his son in. His son had a bruise on his head. His actual son was 3 years old. They didn't know what it was, and so they had to get a CT scan. And so, anyway, long story short, they charged him $20,000, and $10,000 was because a trauma team was activated, quote unquote.
A trauma team was activated, and probably in his insurance it says something like you've got to notify them before you can have a trauma team activated, and well, if you don't let them know within 24 hours or something, then boom, you know, they deny coverage. You
so
know?
He says how to fight an outrageous hospital bill in 10 easy steps. First, be a doctor or a nurse, then learn about upcoding. So in the end, though, he was successful to get that $10,000 charge reversed. Even though, and he goes into the nine things he had to do because people kept telling him, no, you're wrong, no, you're wrong, no, you're wrong. He did his homework. What the rest of us mere mortals can do, he says, is go out on Google and just keep doing it and doing it and doing it. You can find, and he found the protocols that would have been required, that was clear and obvious, that they didn't follow those, that so they never could have activated this trauma team. And so, but this was a trauma hospital. So this is what they did. They tried to activate the trauma team on every case that came in. And so he had to be very vigilant, and you've got to be motivated to do this.
Sure. I had a situation where I had an outpatient part of a physical, and it was an outpatient thing. They said, you got to go do this. You're 50 years old now, if you get the gist of what I'm talking about.
Sure.
You're 50 years old now, you got to go do this. It's part of your physical exam. And they said, go to this outpatient clinic. They're part of your medical insurance and all this kind of stuff. Well, I did. Next thing I know, I get a bill for $400. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, I didn't ask for this. This is part of my physical. My physical's supposed to be free. What happened to $400? Well, the insurance company says, hey, if you would have gone to the hospital and had it done, it would have been free. But you went to an outpatient clinic. And so I had to fight that and bring a couple people in to help to fight it and ultimately got it reversed. But if you don't know what's going on, you are absolutely, absolutely at the mercy of these people. Insurance companies, I believe, give incentives to their claims processors to change the coding or to figure out how to be aggressive as possible and not claim, because most people are not going to fight those bills. Anyway,
yeah,
that is a great way to save money.
Sure, it is. And again, you need to pay attention. And even if it isn't a $10,000 charge, it's these $50, $100 that get us all.
Yeah. Anyway, next week, I am not going to be here. I'm going to be in Dallas at a conference. Tom Bombasuto, Living Well, is going to be here, and he'll take care of you. This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless. Radio 680.